Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. And I am your host, John Hansen. And today we have a very special guest, a real legend of the sport of bodybuilding. His name is Albert Beckles. And of course, anybody associated with bodybuilding knows the name Albert Beckles. Long before Dexter Jackson started competing as an older guy, Albert Beckles was beating guys in competition and professional competitions in his 50s. So Albert has a long bodybuilding history. He started bodybuilding in the 1960s. He was born in Barbados, but he was competing in England in the Mr. Britain contest. And then he went over to the NABBA Mr. Universe and eventually made his way over to the IFBB, starting off competing in the Mr. World and Mr. Universe contest, and then eventually competing in the Mr. Olympia contest, which he won in his first one in 1975, which was the year they filmed Pumping Iron. So we've got a really good interview with Albert Beckles. Albert is in his 80s now, so it was really a pleasure to talk to such a legend of the sport, especially a guy I grew up reading about and seeing compete, and what a real true legend. So I'm really glad that Albert agreed to talk to us today. So we got that interview coming up in a second. And before we get started, I want to mention that we were brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now, and this is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe contest in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner called Vintage Burn. It's the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner. Or Vintage Blast, which is their two-stage pre-workout. Or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banoot and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order at oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. And they are really expanding their product line too. So if you go to oldschoollabs.com, you'll see a lot of products, including their collagen protein, which I've been using for my joints. And they also have some really great amino acid pills that I've been using, as well as some really good pre-workout stuff. So check out oldschoollabs.com. I appreciate all their support in sponsoring the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And when we get done with our interview with Albert Beckles, I am going to read an article from another old Ironman. This is from the July 1984 issue. And it's one of Albert's big contest wins. It was the 1984 World Professional Championships, which was a big contest that took place. It was usually the first big pro contest that took place of the contest year. It usually took place in February. Muhammad McAway won it in 1983, and that was the first year that Lee Haney competed. And then Albert won it the following year in 1984. And I remember this contest because it was covered, I believe, by NBC Sports World, or maybe ABC. Might have been Wide World of Sports, but one of them. But Arnold was the commentator on the show. And it was a really, really exciting show. And they had a great close down with Albert Beckles, Bill Grant. Bertle Fox was in it. This was one of Bertle's first IFBB shows. He was in really, really good shape for it. Bob Birdsong was in great shape. Greg DeFerro, who lost a previous contest the year before to McAway, was hoping to win, but he got second place to Beckles. So it was one of Albert's first big wins. I think we mentioned in the interview got coming up. So I'm going to read that article as soon as we get finished with our interview. And guys, let me know what you think of these articles. Like I said, I've got a lot of old muscle builder magazines and a lot of old Ironman. So I've been reading mostly the contest reports, but they've also got a lot of training and nutrition type stuff. So let me know and I will read what you guys want to hear. My email address is naturalolympia@gmail.com. So just send me an email and let me know what you think. Or you could also make a comment on the Google page where we have our podcast, Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. So either one, let me know, and I will give you guys what you want. All right. Next week, we are going to have an interview with Jim Seitzer. And Jim was a top bodybuilder, an amateur bodybuilder. He is from Columbus, Ohio. And last week, I mentioned that documentary that was on Netflix called West Side versus the World, about the West Side Barbell that Louis Simmons owned. And I believe Jim Seitzer was a good friend of Louis Simmons. So we're going to get that story from Jim. But Jim competed in a lot of top AAU national level shows. He was second to Ron Tufel at the 1979 Mr. America. I think that was his highest placing. So check that out on the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast next week. All right. And I am still recuperating from my hernia. It's been over a week now since I had my operation, and it's really going great. My recovery is going great. The pain is gone. I'm able to move around really good. I haven't worked out this last week. I'm not supposed to work out for the first month, but I'll find out more when I go to the doctor next week. I go to see him early next week. So I'll see what he has to say about how it's looking. But yeah, I plan on taking probably a month off from the gym, which should give me a nice rest. I haven't really altered my diet too much. I don't know if you guys have tried this intermittent fasting. I was going to give that a try just to try to get leaner while I'm off and I'm not training at all. I was able to do the treadmill this week. So I went, I did that like I think 3 days this week where I got up in the morning and went on the treadmill. I just went 20 minutes the first time and I think 25 minutes the second time. So I'll probably just work up to like a half hour. He told me I could walk on the treadmill, so I'll just do that for my exercise, but I can't do any weight training. So I thought while I'm off the gym and I can't train, I might try this intermittent fasting, which is basically like a 16-hour fast, and then you're able to eat for 8 hours. So it didn't work for me, guys. I tried it for like 1 or 2 days, and I was starving so much during that fast. I can't go that long without eating. So I've cut down to about, I think, 4 meals a day instead of my normal 6. I don't think my fat has gone down at all. My waist is still the same. I've lost a few pounds, so I'll probably lose a little bit of muscle. But as long as I don't get fatter, I think I'll probably just try to maintain this, try to do the treadmill 5 days a week just to burn some calories. But I'm obviously going to lose some muscle. I don't think I'm going to lose that much, and I'm sure it'll come back fast. I have to do 4 weeks of light training when I come back. So I think I'll start training probably right after the Mr. Olympia, after I go to that trip to Vegas. When I come back from that, I'll probably start light training then for 4 weeks, and then start my normal training after that. So should be good. Probably the layoff will probably do me good, so it's no big deal. So speaking of the Mr. Olympia, that is only 3 weeks away already. So I'm going to be writing my predictions for the top 10 of the Mr. Olympia this year, and I'm going to do that for Old School Labs. So I'm going to give that to them probably earlier this week. So I will let you guys know where that article is if you want to check it out. Kai Greene is not going in it. We got that news this week. I guess he's making a movie in India, so he's definitely not going in it, which we didn't think he was going to. Phil Heath, I think, is still up in the air. There's still rumors that he might do it, but I'm not sure. When I write this article, I'm just going to just go under the assumption that he's not competing. So we got the top guys going in. It will probably be Brandon Curry. Rowley Winkler's looking really good. Dexter Jackson just coming off that Tampa Pro win. Of course, William Bonick is always a threat. I'm hoping Cedric McMillan does something this year. We got the new guy, Luke Sandow. He's going to do really well. So it should still be a great show. I think Brandon Curry, I've said this before and I'll say it again, I think he's the guy to put your money on. I think he's got all the momentum going, and I think he's really made some improvements, even from the Arnold earlier in the year. So I think he's going to be the one to take it. It'll be interesting if Phil Heath does go in it, if he will be able to beat Brandon Curry with the improvements that Brandon has made. And considering Phil probably only will have trained for the show for only a couple of months. So it'll be interesting. We'll see what happens. We didn't get any emails last week at all about the Sameer Bhanoot interview. So I hope you guys like that. Like I said, part one was kind of screwed up with the audio, but last week was much better. So it was a pretty interesting interview with Sameer, and hopefully we can have him on the show again to talk about another subject. I did get one email from Tim Christ. And Tim said, hey, John, I'm a longtime listener. Every show is the best. I can't wait until your Jim Seitzer interview. He used to MC some of the shows in Cincinnati for a friend of mine, and his Lance Humphreys. You might mention his name to Jim. Thanks for these shows, and I look forward to them every week. All right. Thank you, Tim. That was the only email we got. We didn't get any emails on Facebook or any other emails about last week's show with Samir. So let me know what you guys think of this Albert Beckles interview this week and any other people you might want to have interviewed. And I am still working on our second anniversary. I know we're way past the second anniversary, which I think was July 4th. But I do want to put that show up because we got some great clips from last year, you know, all the interviews I did last year with so many of those guys. So I do want to get some of those clips and share them with you guys because we really did do a lot of great interviews over the last year. We're up over 100 shows now. We've done over 100 podcasts on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast in the last 2 years. So we're racking them up. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't think the show was going to last over a year because I didn't think I would find anybody else to interview. But we're going on over 2 years now, so we'll see how long this thing goes, and I hope you guys are enjoying the show. All right, before we go to our interview with Albert Beckles, I do want to mention our other sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them in Tampa, Florida at their office number, which is 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. Tell them that you heard the ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and you'll get a free consultation. Plus, you will get 20% off your order, and they will work with anybody in the continental United States. You do not have to be in the Florida area. All right, that is it for our opening. Here is our interview with the great Albert Beckles, a true legend in the sport of bodybuilding. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I have a true bodybuilding legend with us today. His name is Mr. Albert Beckles, and Albert started competing in the 1960s, and he competed all the way up until the 1990s. He was one of the top pro bodybuilders in the 1980s and 1990s, so it's a pleasure to have you on the line. How you doing, Albert?
I'm doing good.
All right, great to hear your voice. How's everything?
Everything is as expected. You know, retired, mm-hmm. but now still working out almost every day.
Really? Oh, that's great.
Yes, everything is good. I like it.
Great. You sound good. Well, Albert, I thought we could start with your bodybuilding career. First of all, can you tell us what year you were born, Albert? Because there's been a lot of controversy over the years about how old you were when you were competing.
Let's see. My year, it's July 14th.
Mm-hmm. What year was it, Albert?
My wife is shouting. 36.
36? Okay. All right, great. So tell us a little bit about how you got into bodybuilding. What made you start lifting weights? You were originally from Barbados, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, my older brother, he was an Olympic lifter.
Okay.
And I used to follow him to the gym, you know. Just play around.
Mm-hmm.
But doing that, I got to like it. Instead of weightlifting, I picked bodybuilding because I always want to be big and strong and show off.
Right. And what age were you at that time, Albert? How old were you when you started doing that?
At that time, I was, I would say about 16, 17.
Okay. So what was life like in Barbados where you grew up?
Life was good where I grew up, but in regards to weightlifting and bodybuilding, it was basically weightlifting,
mm-hmm.
and I was just a kid, you know. I just liked it and just continued to do it and wanted to compete. I competed in Barbados. I won the Mr. Barbados, And then I went on to win the Mr. West Indies. Yeah. And then after that, I emigrated to England.
So what was it like when you first started competing? How did you like it? Did it take a while to learn how to do the poses? And, you know, what was your diet like?
I didn't have a diet when I was in Barbados.
Oh, really?
We didn't know that much.
So
everything that I did, I kind of learned for myself.
Yeah, I did an interview with Roy Callender, and he said when he started competing, you were the guy, you know, like everybody knew about Albert Buckles because you were, you know, you won so many titles in Barbados, and you were kind of a legend out there.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. So what age did you move to England then?
I moved to England. I was 22.
Okay.
I moved to England, but I didn't work out or anything. I was in a strange country. I had to start looking at the other side, you know, studying on what kind of work I was going to be able to do and stuff like that. And all, I got married. I got two kids. I had to think about how I'm going to support them. So I really didn't get into competing. I was doing a little bit of training, but not a lot.
Okay.
But then I was fortunate. I landed a job where I worked as an accountant, and I was for the government. So I had a fair amount of time, and there was a gym in the building.
There was a gym in the building. Oh, okay. Cool.
So I started working out, and the guys I was working out with, they were trying to get me to compete for quite a while. And I kept saying no. But one day I was looking through the Health and Strength magazine.
Right.
And I saw the guy that won the Mr. Britain, and I thought, wow, I'm better than he is. And I think that's what got me going.
Okay. Albert, did you find you had good genetics when you started lifting weights? Did you grow muscle pretty easily?
No.
Oh, no.
And some things that's not very smart really worked for me. I never really went into the genetics thing. I just thought that if you want to build a car, right, you get the parts, you go to the shop, you put it together.
Right.
I wanted to build my body. I go to the gym, work out.
Was your arms, was that an easy growing body part, you know, your famous biceps?
No.
Really?
My calf.
Oh, your calf? Really?
Yeah.
Huh. That's surprising to hear. I thought your arms would go right away.
Well, there's one time I competed in the in England. I thought I should have won that contest, but I didn't. A lot of people thought I should have, but I didn't. So I went to, at the time, the president of NABBA.
Yeah.
And I said to him, well, why did I win? What do you think was wrong? He says, your upper body is fantastic, but your calves are too small. Yeah, and I thought, you know what? If I want to build my biceps, how do I work out? And then apply the same thing to my calves, and they grew.
Okay. So what was your training philosophy like, Albert? Like, how often did you train? Did you use heavy weights? Did you use lighter weights?
I always did a system I call the pyramid system. That's
okay.
If I do 10 reps with 100 pounds and it feels light, I would add 2 tenths to the bar. And on that kind of principle.
So you did more higher reps, like 8 to 10 reps, 8 to 12 reps?
No, I did between, I do like 10 to 12.
10 to 12, okay.
And
then how often were you working out? Because I know everybody was probably working out like 6 days a week back then, right?
Back then I was working out 5 days a week.
5 days a week, okay.
You know, like I said, the gym was in the building where I worked. And I only worked 8.
Right. So your first Mr. Universe contest that you did, that was back in 1965, right?
Yeah.
How was that experience? You got like 3rd place in your class, in the medium class.
Well, I think most of my competitive years, I was kind of struggling with that. I always feel, and other people always thought I was better than I played.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at that time, they were also saying that I didn't get the credit I deserve.
Okay.
That stuff like that made me stronger. You know, it made me want to train more.
Right.
And try to get better than I was previous.
Yeah. Now, when you did that first Mr. Universe, was that your goal? Did you want to one day win Mr. Universe one day?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. I wanted to win the Mr. Universe when I was in my early teens.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Was there anybody you looked up to back then when you were younger that you wanted to emulate?
Yes, his name was Earl Maynard.
Oh, yeah, Earl Maynard. Yeah, I remember him.
Mm. Yeah, I think he won the universe, and he went into wrestling.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Stuff like that, yes.
Yeah, I think he was in the first Mr. Olympia, too, in 1965.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And, you know, when I was looking at your contest history here, Albert, I noticed that Mr. Britain contest in NABBA, that was a real big contest, right? I mean, there was a lot of guys in that contest, and you went in that a few times before you eventually won it.
Oh, yeah. I have a story about that, actually.
Okay.
You know, you have to qualify for the Mr. Britain. Mm-hmm. And to qualify, you have to win so many contests.
Okay.
So I did that. And about a month before the contest, I still didn't get the invitation to compete in the Mr. Britain.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I went to see the president. And I don't know if I should be saying this on the air, but I'll take a shot. And he said to me, the contest is called Mr. Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, yes, so. He said, well, Mr. Britain means that you've got to be white. And I said to him, okay, but I'm confused. I have a friend that works for the Daily Mirror, which is the local rag paper.
Mm-hmm.
I says, I have a friend that works there, so I think I'll ask him, because on my passport it says British. So I think I'll have him explain it to me. So to get to this, get to the president's office, you have to go up the stairs. Mm-hmm. Halfway down down the stairs, he shouts, Albert, come back, come back. I go up, he hands me the entry form. So I go back to the gym telling my friends about it, and they say, well, you're not going to compete, are you? And I said, yes, of course I'm going to compete. But this guy picks the judges and everything. I says, right, so I won't be competing I won't be competing against the guys on stage. I'll be competing against the judges.
Right.
That's how I train.
Okay.
And I won.
Yeah.
That was the first time I won.
Wow.
Then I went for a year and win again.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
How many times did you win that contest?
I won it twice.
Twice? Okay.
Twice.
So that must have been a pretty prestigious contest, huh? And out in...
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That qualifies you for the universe.
Oh, I see. Okay. Hey, tell me about the 1967 Mr. Universe, because that was the one that Arnold won, and you did really good in that also. You won the medium class.
Yeah. Very impressive. Very impressive. Arnold was most definitely the best guy on the stage at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the amateur universe.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were you surprised he was only like 20 years old?
I was surprised. I was also surprised how big he were.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was big. Not very sharp at that time, but big, you know.
Right.
Right. And everybody was surprised.
You beat out Roy Callender in that contest. He got second. You got first.
Yeah. I did good.
Yeah. So what year did you think you started to get some recognition in the magazines and people really started to notice you, Albert?
I would say the late 60s.
Late 60s? Okay.
Late 60s. I was fairly good entering in NABBA,
mm-hmm.
but one day after I competed, Rick Wayne came to me and says, you know what? you can't go any further in NABBA. Why don't you join the IFBB?
Mm-hmm.
And I took him up on that offer.
Okay. So you went into the first IFBB show. Was that in 1969 when you did the Mr. World contest and you got second place?
Yeah. This is a long time ago, so I got I can remember this stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking at the computer here, so I got an advantage. But it says Frank Zane won the show, and you got second place to Frank Zane.
Yes.
Okay.
I also won the Mr. World a couple of times.
Yeah, that's what it says. It says you won the AAU Mr. World and Mr. Universe.
Yeah, like 71 to like 75. I did pretty good.
Okay. What did you think of Frank Zane when you saw him the first time?
Symmetry was very good. Symmetry was good. His posing was outstanding. If I remember right, he also had his wife with him, I think, and she looked fantastic as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think they both won the Universe at that time.
Yeah, right. I remember when she won the bikini and then he won the amateur, and I think Arnold won the professional.
Yeah. I mean, all of that was like inspiration for me.
Yeah.
And I like when people tell me that, you don't look so good.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
That motivates you more, right?
Oh, yeah.
Were people telling you that back then? Or were people more praising you for
how you were? Said to me, well, you didn't win because.
Uh-huh.
You know, and when I get that because, it was like, okay, thank you.
Now, were you ever thinking about coming over to America to compete back then, Albert?
No. I only decided to do that, what day was? It was after I won the Universe. I won the Universe two times in 1 year.
Was that 71?
Two times in 1 year, yeah. I won the NABBA Universe,
uh-huh.
And I won the
IFBB.
AAU Universe, I think it was, or the
okay.
Yeah, it was the IFBB Universe I won in Paris.
Paris, right.
Yeah. And yeah, after that, Wayne D'Amelio called me up, asked me if I would like to compete in California.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's how I started. I'm outside. I got size.
Tell me about that Mr. Universe in the IFBB Universe. Was that your first IFBB contest? Because you won the overall at the Mr. Universe. So that was pretty good.
Yeah. That's another story. That's another story. There was quite a few guys from here was going to compete.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I was very good. I was very, very good according to the European standard.
Mm-hmm.
And they changed the rules, the judging rules.
Right.
Something like they rule out the first place and the last place.
Oh, with the scores. Okay.
Yeah. So I came out in the medium class and I was the best.
Mm-hmm.
So all the judges had me first.
Right.
And there was a guy called Analulu, I think.
Oh, yes. From Turkey. Yeah.
The Turkish guy.
Yeah.
But he got all seconds, so according to their judging scores, then he was the winner. So they make him the winner in the medium class. So I said if I wanted to be second, I would have stayed in England. So I walk off the stage. I know that wasn't sportsmanlike, but I was young and hot-headed. I walk off the stage. The dressing room was downstairs. So I'm downstairs getting dressed. And Mr. Weeder and Serge Nubre come and they says, Albert, you got to come back. You got to come back. So I went back up with my clothes on. And there were guys on the stage sweeping off the cans and the bottles and tomatoes off the the stage. So there were pictures of me just standing on the rostrum with my clothes on.
Really?
And as soon as I walk on stage, the guy that they had second, Analulu, he walks over and hand me the first place trophy.
Huh. So were people throwing stuff on the stage after you walked off?
Stuff on the stage when Penda made me second. So I went back, and obviously I also took the overall then.
Right? Yeah. So why did they, if he got all seconds and you got all first, why did they put you in second place? I don't understand.
Because they were supposed to throw out the first places and the second and the last places.
Uh-huh.
So after throw out the first place, there's nowhere to put me, really.
Oh, I see. Okay. Wow. And before that, you did the NABBA Universe, right? The one in England. And you won your class there. Yeah. Wasn't that the year that the IFBB started suspending people if they competed in NABBA?
Why? You have all the stories. after I won the universe in both areas, I got an invitation to compete in the AAU.
Okay.
Mr. Pearl.
Right.
So I went to the president of the IFBB at the time in England, and I said to him, what am I supposed to do? I've got this invitation. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, if you want to be the best in the world, you have to compete against the best in the world.
Yeah.
So I went. I won the contest plus all the subdivisions.
All the body parts, yeah.
I even beat Serge Nubre for best chess.
Oh, really? Wow.
That was a really big thing for me.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't even bring home all the trophies I got. I had to leave some over there.
Wow. Where was that at?
At home, there was a letter that got there before me. It was a year for entering an illegal contest.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that kind of threw me off because it was a year without. I trained a little. I didn't have anything to train for, so I didn't put as much into it as I should.
Mm-hmm. There was a lot of politics back then with all the different organizations, huh?
Yeah. But I don't think that it was fair to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because the president of the IFBB in England, he gave me the okay to compete.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, when you're competing like I was at that time, there's things that you couldn't shout about.
Yeah.
You know, they wouldn't help you in the end, so.
Right. Hey, what did you think of, let me ask you, what did you think of Sergio and Bill Pearl? Because that was a big contest that a lot of people still talk about today. And you were right there at the contest in 1971. Who did you think should have won that contest, just from your perspective?
Putting me in a corner now, ain't you? No, I thought Sergio Ware was phenomenal.
Sergio, yeah.
Yeah, big arms, wide on top, small waist.
Right.
I thought he should have won myself. But okay. That's only my opinion.
Yeah, I always ask people that were there just to get their opinion, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So then after that year, you pretty much decided to go with the IFBB all the time, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you did the IFBB Mr. Universe again in 73, and that was the one that Lou Ferrigno won, right? You won your class. You won the medium class, yeah.
Uh-huh.
What did you think of Lou Ferrigno? Because he was another big young guy, right?
He was big, yeah.
Yeah.
I think things was like reaching the turning point where all the guys, most of the guys coming in at that time were really big.
Oh, really? You could see the difference from the 60s?
Yeah. Yes, we're really mm-hmm. good.
Yeah. Now, had you ever...
I think really that's how Ferrigno won. Not because he was more muscular or so. He was just big.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. You were with him in the pose down, right? Because you won the medium class. Yeah. Now, were you ever thinking about going in the Mr. Olympia at that point? Because that contest was starting to get bigger at that point, right? In the early 70s?
Oh, I'm trying to remember whether I... competed in the Night of the Champions before the Olympia, because I had to qualify for the Olympia.
Yeah, I think your first Olympia was 75, right? The one in Pretoria?
Yes.
You did the Universe and the Olympia. You got second to Robbie at the Universe. Then you took third in the Olympia behind Franco and Ed Corney.
Yes.
And that's when they were filming the movie Pumping Iron. Did you know anything about that going on? Did you know they were filming a movie?
No, I didn't know.
Okay.
And they had me and Ferrigno in a cage with...
Oh, with the giraffe and stuff, right? But, and the lion?
But that, it wasn't the giraffe. It was a young leopard cat.
Oh, a leopard. Okay.
And they put oil on us, you know, kind of oil. And the leopard is licking my leg.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and suddenly the attendant shout, "Get him out, get him out, get him out." Apparently, you know, with their tongue so rough and everything, he got to the point where he can smell the blood.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And when they got us out, like 2 seconds later, you couldn't believe that we were in that cage with that animal.
Really? Why? What happened?
He was...
Wow, really?
Yeah, but that's going crazy. Back to the story, when we got out, I said to one of the guys, well, asked them if they were paid for this stuff. Mm-hmm. And nearly all of them was paid except me. So I went to, I think it was the director at the time, to discuss that. And he says, well, we can't pay you because we're over budget as it is.
Mm-hmm.
He says, okay, well, you're going to have to cut me out. So if you watch the movie Pumping Iron, you'll see I'm only in there like once or twice.
Yeah, just like in the background.
Yeah.
Hmm. So that's kind of how it went. Huh? If they didn't pay you, then you really weren't in the movie, right?
No.
Yeah, I heard that about Serge Debré, too. I heard they filmed a lot of him in France, and then I guess he turned down the money or something. He wanted more money. And since they didn't give him the money, then they ended up cutting a lot of the scenes for the movie.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Well, most of it was done over here. So people that weren't living here, they thought at the time that there wouldn't be much interest.
Right, right. Were you surprised when that movie came out, how big it was? How popular it got? Yeah.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think everybody was. I don't think people knew it was going to be that big of a movie, you know?
Well, it's still big today. People still tell me that.
Yeah,
saw you
in
the movie, you know?
Right.
The thing.
So then you did the Olympia again in 77 when it was in Columbus, Ohio, right?
Yes.
And that's when Arnold was producing it with Jim Lorimer.
That's right. That's Columbus Day.
Yeah. It says you got fourth in the under 200-pound class.
Hmm.
But the crowds were going crazy that year, weren't they, Albert? That was like got a lot of coverage.
Oh, yeah. And they like my dancing.
So tell me about those years when you were competing in Columbus in the late 70s and Frank Zane was winning the contest, because I was at a lot of those shows. I was only a teenager, but I went to Columbus to see him. And I remember you competing. You had an outstanding physique. You weren't, I don't think you were really hitting your peak yet, but you were really, you had a really great physique.
No, I reached my peak when I, in 85, when I competed against Kenny.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the best I've ever been.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, isn't that crazy, Albert, that when you were younger, you weren't at your peak. You didn't reach your peak until you got older.
Yes, that was, but I never, like I said earlier, I never give up. I never thought that about, you know, how big and how sharp I can be. I just keep going.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think you got better as you got older? Was it just you were learning more about diet or the muscles getting more mature?
Yes, diet and mature, yes.
Okay.
Right on.
Now, what was your diet like back then, Albert? I remember reading in the magazines you would eat like real clean food, right? Fish, pineapple, things like that, like low fat,
low
high protein.
Fat.
Okay.
Yes. Well, I was still into the old way of doing it. You know, I would diet really hard, mm-hmm. get really sharp, and after that, I would go on the off season diet where I eat all kind of stuff.
Oh, okay.
30 pounds. And then had to lose it for my next contest, which was like a yo-yo up and down.
Mm-hmm.
So one day I thought, you know what? This is stupid. So So after the contest, I decided I would go up maybe 10 pounds at the most.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, I find I was a lot fuller and sharper.
Okay.
Because I didn't have to drain off so much every time.
Yeah, yeah. And were you able to compete at a heavier weight? Like, did you hold on to more muscle that way?
Yep.
Okay.
A lot more. Yeah, I did about that system. I finished up doing maybe 10, 15 pounds.
If you look at your physique from back then, you know, you look from the late 70s and then you go into the 1980s, you can really see a difference in your physique. You were so much more muscular, you know?
Bigger and fuller, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You could see you always had the potential, but it just, you weren't like really ripped enough yet.
And it was all me. I didn't have anybody to go to. I didn't have anybody to say, well, you should put your arm this way when you're posing or that way or...
Mm-hmm.
All me.
And I imagine your stage presentation had to get better too, right, Albert? I mean, you're doing all these contests over all these years.
Yeah.
Every time you competed, it had to get better, right?
It had to be better.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I tell myself, and that's how it worked out.
Yeah. Did you guys do any cardio back then, or was it just training and diet?
Just training and diet. I didn't like doing cardio.
Yeah, who does? Now, they started in the 1980s. They had a lot of these Grand Prix contests, and you would compete in a lot of those too, right?
Yes, I did.
Were you still in England at that time, or did you move over to the United States by then?
Oh, I was in England.
You were still in England. Okay.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of traveling then, huh?
When I wasn't competing, I was doing other stuff like seminars and guest appearance.
Mm-hmm.
I was like on the road almost every weekend.
So at what point were you able to start living your life just as a bodybuilder and you could be able to quit your job? Was that like in the 70s or 80s?
That was 80s.
That's 80s, like, okay. Yeah.
Like 82.
Did you meet Wayne D'Amelio back then around that time? Because he was promoting a lot of those shows, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So your first big win, I'm looking at your contest history here. You won the Grand Prix New England in 81. You beat out Chris Dickerson and Boyer Coe. So that was like your first big one, right? Because you were always placing second to those guys, and then you were finally able to beat them in that contest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was exciting.
Yeah. Did you think about doing the Olympia in 1980, the one that Arnold won?
No.
You weren't in that one, right?
No, I weren't in that, and I weren't in 81.
Okay. How did you avoid the 1981 like Mensah and Boyer Coe and Frank Zane did because you thought it was going to be kind of set up for Franco to win?
I had a whisper. And I deliberately missed him.
Yeah, you four were the big names, I think, that didn't compete in that show. And then
I'm just doing this by memory.
Yeah, yeah. And you got second to Dickerson that year, too, right, in 1981?
Yeah.
At the Night of the Champions.
That really pushed me, yes.
Yeah.
I thought I should have won that, but then I went on to think, well, maybe I wasn't better. I wasn't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You'll notice after that is when I start putting on more weight and looking a lot fuller.
Hmm. So was that mostly from the diet, you think?
Yeah.
So how old were you back then, Albert? Yeah, like in the early 80s? You had to be like in your 40s, right?
I never think about genetics. I never thought about age.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I just thought about diet.
Yeah.
What's worked for me and what doesn't work for me. I solely believe that that's why I was able to compete so many times.
Yeah. Were other people talking to you about that? Were they like, wow, you're really doing good for being in your 40s? Or
no.
you just didn't even want to think about that, right?
Into that.
Hmm.
I never listened to that. But it's only a matter of mind, and if you don't mind, it doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah, I saw an interview with you before once. I think it was when you won that 1984 Pro World, the one that was in Atlantic City, and you guys were dancing on the stage.
Yeah.
And I think Arnold interviewed you afterwards, and you told him that too. You said you never think about your age.
Never.
Yeah. So in 82, then, you started to really win some contests. You won the Night of the Champions, and you beat out Bertel Fox. You remember him from England, because he was he was competing with you in England before. And you beat out Johnny Fuller and McAway. So you did really good in that show. That was a big win, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then you went in the Olympia that year, and that was the one that Dickerson won, and you got fifth place. Do you think you should have did better in that one?
84. No, I didn't. That wasn't my thing. In 84, I was really concentrating on the Olympia. Uh-huh. 85. The way my body was working and the improvements I was making, I thought at 85 I would be able to do it.
Okay.
I put a lot into it. I left home. I leave home for about 4 months.
Oh, really? Okay.
To Germany.
Oh, okay.
To prepare for that.
Yeah, because that contest was in Belgium, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the 84 Olympia was a big one for you, too, because that was the one where you really had your stage presence down, right? I mean, you started – that's where you were dancing across the stage and stuff, and the mm-hmm. crowd was going crazy. That was the one in New York where Sergio came back and Lee Haney won his first Olympia, right?
Yes.
How'd you feel you did on that one? Because I think you were really popular in that one.
Well, I put all that together. That's why I was so sure that I could have took the 85.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because then after that Olympia, you went to that World Grand Prix in Canada, and you won first place there. And you looked even better there than you did at the Olympia.
But I didn't train as much.
Oh, you didn't train as much?
Didn't train as much, no. I kind of lost a lot of my determination after.
Oh, really? How come?
I don't know. I mean, it was up to the point where you think you got to be better. You got to be better. You could be better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you did get better, but you still didn't win. What do you tell yourself? That.
Mm-hmm.
So then, after Olympia, I think most of it was just like hit and miss, you know. Didn't put as much training into it. If you follow the record, you'll see that I just wanted to win the Niagara Falls. I was
going to retire
after the Niagara Falls.
Okay.
You know, I got talked into competing, I think, for another 4 or 5 contests.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't do so well because I didn't have that drive.
Mm-hmm.
But looking back, all I would do it again if I had to or could do.
Yeah. Well, let me take you back to 85 then, Albert. That was a big year for you. After the 84 Olympia, when Lee Haney won, what did you think of Lee Haney? Because he was a pretty impressive winner, huh?
Yes, when he won, he was good, really good.
Yeah.
When he won that year. But, you know, looking back at it all, I kind of understood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 85, Haney wasn't at his best.
He wasn't at his best, no?
Not in my opinion. He wasn't at his best.
Okay.
But he had won the year before.
Right.
You know, he just had to win the second time.
Yeah, yeah. And you also won the Night of the Champions that year, too.
Yeah.
And you beat out that young Rich Gaspari. He was a new guy coming up. And Mike Christian and all the new guys. You beat out those guys.
Yeah, 85 was a good year.
Yeah, it sure was.
85 and 71, I think.
Those were your two best years, you think?
My best, 71, yeah, 71 and 85.
Yeah. And then you mentioned that Niagara Falls show. So, I mean, that was like 6 years later, and you won that contest. So how old were you then? You had to be in your 50s then, right?
Probably.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
that's pretty amazing.
Mid-50s.
Wow, mid-50s. That's amazing. Did you get a lot of respect from the other competitors, Albert, because you were an older guy and you've been around for so long and you were winning these contests?
Yep.
Yeah.
Get guys asking me questions.
Uh-huh. So let me ask you, Albert, you know, you competed for so long, for so many decades, in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and all the way up until the 90s. What do you think the difference was, you know, when you look at the guys from the 60s that you were competing against, and then you go to the 70s, was it that they were getting bigger, or was it more muscularity, more ripped? Because your career really spanned a long time. Not too many guys compete for that long of a time.
I think in the early days it was the name was Body Beautiful.
Okay.
Now it's just bodybuilding.
Yeah.
I think that explains.
Do you think it looked better back in the 60s and 70s than it did later on?
That what?
Do you think it was a better sport, or the guys looked better back in the 60s and 70s, or do you think they looked better later?
Yes, everything was better. Everything was better.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Well, in those days, people used to dress up to go to contests.
Yeah, yeah. What were the crowds like back then, Albert?
Big thing, yes.
Were the crowds more enthusiastic, too? Did it seem like they knew more about the sport? Yeah.
I just told you, they throw stuff on the stage.
Right. Well, like I said, I used to go to the Olympia in Columbus in the late 70s, and the crowds were crazy. I mean, you don't see that kind of reaction anymore. You know, the people were standing up, cheering, you know?
Yep.
So do you still follow the sport now, Albert? Do you go in any contests or anything?
Oh, yeah. I judge it sometimes.
Oh, you do? Okay.
And I train, I train 6 days now, near enough.
Yeah. Yep. You're training 6 days a week still, huh? That's great.
Mm-hmm.
What's your training like now?
I don't train for as many hours as before. Mm-hmm. I train between basically about an hour and a half.
Okay.
Now.
You split up a little bit?
I'm not trying to prove anything anymore, just for me.
Just for health, yeah.
Yeah.
You split up the body parts still, like you used to?
Yes, that's why I can train 6 days.
Okay. Is there any limitations on things you can't do? I mean, are there certain exercises you stay away from anymore?
I stay away from squats.
Okay.
Because I don't know if you heard or read that I had a really big operation.
No. When was that?
I did. When was it, honey? In 2011.
Okay.
Now I have a lot of metal in my back. And no pain or anything, but I'm stiff most of the time, so that's why I have to go to the gym.
Well, you had a back operation.
Spinal fusion,
okay, yeah. Well, that's great that you still get in the gym 6 days a week and still work out.
I'm a bodybuilder, don't forget that part.
Right. Yeah, once a bodybuilder, always a bodybuilder, right?
Yep.
So, Albert, when you look back at your career, I mean, you said 1971 and 1985, those were probably your best years. Was there any specific contest that, really stood out, like any certain memories, whether it was in the beginning or later on?
Oh, that's a bit hard. I enjoyed every one.
You really? Yeah, you always enjoyed it.
I enjoyed every one.
Well, I think the odd...
I competed about close to 100 times.
Wow, yeah. Unbelievable.
I enjoyed it that much.
How was it when you won that 91 Niagara Falls Grand Prix? How did that feel? That had to feel great after, because you hadn't won a show in quite a few years.
Yeah.
And then you're in your mid-50s and you win that one.
That was a good turning point for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Finally convinced myself that I can do it.
Right.
Yep.
When did you decide to stop competing, Albert?
Like I said earlier, after the Olympia,
mm-hmm.
and something, I always wanted to win the Niagara Falls, so I pushed myself really hard for that. But after that, I didn't have that push anymore.
Didn't have that drive?
I didn't have that anymore, so
mm-hmm.
the fun was still there, because after I retired, I would go to a show, and I would still find myself posing.
Right.
It wasn't an easy step down, but now it's really great.
You're still enjoying life and you're still healthy and you're still working out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's great. Well, that's the bodybuilding lifestyle, right? I mean, if you take care of your body, you can hang around for a long time and still be healthy, right? Still be strong, still be muscular.
Mm-hmm. Still watching my eating.
You're watching your eating, yeah.
That's another old habit that's hard to break.
Yeah, right.
You know, I can do a lot of things now that I didn't do when I was competing.
Like what?
Fun. You know, like go to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go to the bar because I don't drink or smoke.
Right.
But have fun.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, I think you're really living the bodybuilding lifestyle. And I think the guys like you that competed back in those days, you know, the classic old-time bodybuilders, I think you guys really showed us how to do it right, because you reach an older age and you're not dying young, you know, like some of these guys, and you're still able to stay healthy and you're still able to train and enjoy life. Especially you, Albert. I mean, you were competing until your 50s. That's an amazing accomplishment. I mean, you're competing against the best in the world. You weren't just competing in your 50s. You were competing against the best bodybuilders in the world and beating them.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
I needed that. Now I'm ready to go to the gym now.
Well, Albert, I just want to thank you for joining us on the show. It was a great opportunity to get to talk to you. I've been a bodybuilding fan of yours for many, many years since I was a kid. So it was a great pleasure to get to talk to you. And it was great to hear your story, because I think it was important for our fans out there to listen to this, because you did have such an amazing career and you've seen so much and you competed in so many shows.
Yes, and I enjoyed everyone.
All right.
Nice talking to you too.
All right, Albert. Thanks. Nice talking to you. And you take care of yourself, okay?
I'll do my best.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank Albert Beckles for taking the time out to do the interview with us. I really do appreciate that, Albert. And next week, we will be joined by our guest, Jim Seitzer from Cincinnati, Ohio. I made the mistake of saying it's from Columbus, but he's actually from Cincinnati, Ohio. And Jim is going to talk about his career in the AAU, where he was one of the top national level bodybuilders for many, many years. So that'll be interesting. I also want to thank our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring the show. I want to thank all our Patreon donors for contributing to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast every month. I appreciate you guys doing that. If you're interested in contributing to the show, just go to bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, and the Patreon link is in the upper right-hand corner. All right, without further ado, I do want to read this article now about the World Professional Bodybuilding Championships in 1984. And this was in the July 1984 issue of Iron Man magazine, and it was written by Gary Bartlett again. And the last few articles we've read have been written by Gary Bartlett. It says, "I stared at Bob Kennedy in disbelief. Bob, you can't be serious. I mean, Lee Haney has got to be competing." In his typical English composure, Bob just smiled and replied, "No, Gary, Lee will not be competing. The story is that he's tired of these bodybuilding events. He just wants to get a job like everyone else. Can you believe it? I mean, this guy practically wins everything he competes in, and he's certain to win the Mr. Olympia someday, and he wants to work like the average guy. That's a good one." I was down in Toronto to cover the World Professional Bodybuilding Championships, which would be held at the luxurious Skyline Hotel. In previous years, this event was held in Atlantic City, but a better deal was arranged by the management of the Skyline. This would be the first pro show in Canada in several years, and by the packed theater during the prejudging, it was clear that interest in pro bodybuilding in Canada was very high. My good friend and supreme contest organizer Wayne D'Amelio was on hand to coordinate all the activities, while ABC would record it for television. In discussing the evident popularity in bodybuilding north of the border with IFBB President Ben Weider, he seemed elated to see so much interest in pro bodybuilding in his home country. "To be honest, Gary, I'm shocked at the response of this audience in the city of Toronto. In fact, if this contest comes off as well as I think it will, then we may hold the women's pro championships along with the couples here in May. The IFBB wants to hold contests only for the best audiences and under the most favorable conditions." I'm sure that Ben got his wish, because as the prejudging began, people continued to file into the Skyline Ballroom. By the time the competitors were ready to go on stage, the theater was packed. I've seen many pro shows where less people have attended the evening show. In the days preceding the contest, I spent some time with the known author and publisher, Bob Kennedy. He was a gracious host, and it was very entertaining to be standing among the bodybuilding works at Hardcore Bodybuilding. He was a gracious host, and it was very entertaining to be standing among such bodybuilding works as Hardcore Bodybuilding, numerous magazines, benches, supplements, and just about everything that you can imagine in connection with bodybuilding. In fact, his new book, BeFit, was selling so rapidly that he did not have any left in stock. In discussing the sudden interest in bodybuilding around Toronto, Bob explained that there's always been a great deal of interest in the sport. However, the region never really had a good promoter to organize a major event such as the World Professional Championships. Now that we have the Skyline Hotel, look out. I must say, I was somewhat disappointed to see the absence of several of our top pros as the 13 contestants filed on stage. Last year's winner, Muhammad McAway, was in Europe doing seminars and exhibitions. Lee Haney was elsewhere. Tony Pearson was in Toronto, but doing a seminar. Apparently, he had taken some time off training. With the addition of these three in top shape, we could have had one outstanding show. Regardless, things were not so bad as several of our competitors were in outstanding condition, which resulted in several surprises. Following is a brief description of each man in the order he placed. Roger Callard with 195 points in 13th place. This is the first time I've ever seen Roger compete, and I have to say that Roger definitely was in the wrong place at the wrong time. In the past, he was a top amateur, and by his appearance today, he was far from ready to tackle our seasoned pros. I can sympathize with Roger's need to become a pro bodybuilder, but to accomplish this, you need more than posing trunks to get up on stage. Salvador Ruiz, 177 points in 12th place. I'd seen Ruiz compete in this contest last year. He was in fairly good shape today, but his body structure limits his potential to really do much more than finish out the last placings in these competitive pro events. His physique just does not create much of an impact, and winning the title of Mr. Spain 5 years in a row does little to boost him against the likes of DeFerro, Beckles, and Fox. Steve Mihalik, 164 points in 11th place. This is the best condition I've seen Steve compete in for quite some time. However, he still requires more mass and density. His physique, although fairly cut, just lacks the deepness and separation of the others. That elusive quality of thick hardness combined with striated definition just is not there. Steve could improve his posing. Dave Johns, 144 points in 10th place. I was very surprised to see that Dave had shed several pounds of excess bulk to arrive at this condition in much improved condition. Dave was about as good as I've ever seen him, and it's unfortunate he did not place higher. Regardless, Dave is heading in the right direction, and he should be encouraged to improve on his finish and posing. He has plenty of mass and foundation, and with the right tools, he could add those finishing touches. Today, his arms were huge and massive with plenty of separation. Scott Wilson, 136 points in 9th place. Scott is one of my favorite competitors, and I'm very saddened to see him fall so far behind. Last year, he was very successful in many of his competitions. This year, things seem to be off a very poor start. Scott was not in terrible shape. In fact, he looked very good. The problem seemed to be that he just lacked that huge size and density that we've come to know him for. In discussing this with Scott, I got the impression that he left his diet too long, and he tried to drop too much fat too fast. Whenever this is done, you are bound to lose a bit of size and fullness, an unfortunate mistake for Scott. John Torelli, 113 points in 8th place. One of the major disappointments for me of the entire contest was to see John Torelli fall to 8th place. There was no question that John was favored to win this event, considering Haney was not competing and that John pushed Haney so hard in Las Vegas. Torelli was the talk of the bodybuilding world. Everyone was expecting great things from Torelli at this event. I almost feel responsible for Torelli's low placing because the night before he asked me to come have a look at him in his room. Accompanied by Paul Graham and his beautiful wife, Carol, I made my way to Torelli's room where he proceeded to show me his condition with a couple of poses. At that time, I was impressed and I felt that he would do well. Perhaps if I could have noticed that he was not quite sharp enough, he may have been able to shed a few pounds of water for this competition. In spite of his condition, he looked very good, and he was one of the favorites with the packed audience. I personally felt he should have been in the top six because of his superior size and balance. There was no question that his combination of size, symmetry, and definition was superior to a couple of the others who did make the top six. In fact, I was most surprised to find that a couple of judges placed him in 10th in the final round, while several others had him in 6th. The difference of 4 placings seems rather extreme, considering that these are experienced judges. Danny Padilla, 170 points in 7th place. It was again great to see Danny on stage once again. Danny is always a crowd pleaser, and his antics on stage makes him for an amusing posing. Once, when the crowd was a little sober, Danny raised his arm in a single biceps pose, looked at the audience, gave a boyish grin, and then pointed to his raised arm. This really got everyone going. As for Danny's condition, he looked very good. His symmetry and clean lines are always impressive. He could have been more defined, which would have resulted in a higher placing. Andreas Colling, 91 points in 6th place. This is the first time I've seen Andreas compete since 81 in Montreal. Since then, he's improved his mass and size considerably. I think that today Andreas was definitely one of the most ripped competitors. His abs were so deep and outlined that they stood out better than anyone else's in the contest. Andreas also displayed a very superior package, which combined symmetry, deep cuts, brilliant tan, and plenty of mass. His only weakness is that in the size department, where he's limited due to his structure, it would be impossible for him to pack on the bulk of a fox. I personally felt that Andreas should have placed higher. He was far more ripped than Fox, and he showed more symmetry than Grant. He's been out of competition for a couple of years, resulting in his routine being a bit rusty. Regardless, Andreas must be praised for his splendid condition. Bertel Fox, 79 points in 5th place. I am sure that everybody who purchased a ticket for this show was interested in seeing the current bulk of bodybuilding, the colossal Bertel Fox. Fox shocked everyone at the 83 Olympia with his spectacular showing, and the visits from the Impact that he created are still reverberating. Today, Fox was even more massive and awesome. However, he was not the striated, ripped bodybuilder of the last Olympia. The sharpness he displayed last fall was replaced by a bit of excess bulk. Fox is still an awesome sight, and I would imagine that anyone who has not seen him before would react the same way that a prehistoric dinosaur for the first time. He really carries more muscle per square inch than any other man in the history of the sport. Today, I felt the judges were quite generous to Fox by awarding him 5th place. He was not at his best, but I guess on the merit of his huge mass and bulk, the judges felt he was superior to many of the others. Bob Birdsong with 60 points in 4th place. For some time now, Birdsong has persevered and continued to compete in these pro events with many disappointing placings. More than anyone else, Bob just missed the top 6 in spite of the fact that he was always in excellent shape. Finally, he continued to improve, and recently he's broken into the top placings. His showing in Las Vegas was encouraging, and his condition today was even superior to what he displayed there. I was most impressed with the tightness and cleanliness of line of the various muscles of his upper body. There's no question that Birdsong has one of the most attractively developed upper bodies of all the pros competing today. His back and biceps are exceptional, but his only weakness is in the thighs, where he seems to have trouble showing deep separation and cuts. I especially noticed this in his compulsory poses. In the past year, Bob has impressed on the posing tremendously. However, I still feel that he poses far too long. A shorter and more spunky routine would be much more dramatic. Bill Grant, 50 points in 3rd place. This is the second time that I've seen Grant compete in several years. Last December, he made his North American debut at the Las Vegas show, where he looked very good, but he was a bit rusty in his stage presentation. Today, Bill was considerably improved and ripped to shreds. He was so sharp that he literally crawled with deep striations and snake-sized vascularity. He also presented an outstanding and very aggressive stage manner. His posing was excellent and executed with smooth and gliding transitions, much like Dickerson. Bill used to be known for his disco routines, and today's presentation was totally opposite from his previous style. Judging from the response of the audience, Bill's turnaround was a complete success. However, he could not entirely purge Bill of his disco traits, because in the final pose down, he strolled over to the colossal Beckles, and step by step, they proceeded to do a disco-style pose down. Considering Bill's structural weaknesses, 3rd place in this event is an outstanding feat. As a bonus to his placing, Bill will now qualify for the 1984 Mr. Olympia contest to be held this fall in New York City. Greg DeFerro, 32 points in 2nd place. Greg must be getting tired of placing 2nd at these events. Last year, he was upset by Muhammad McAway, and this year it would be Albert Beckles. Greg was just a shade off his all-time best condition. However, his thick proportions and massive arms more than make up for any lack of ultra cuts. Just standing in the lineup, he looked awesome and unbeatable. The only other competitor who had more muscle was Fox. Greg was sharper than Fox, which made him look more impressive. Unfortunately, Greg always seems to lack a certain quality that leaves him out of the top spot. He does present a few structural flaws in a couple of his mandatory poses. In the side chest, his ribcage is a bit flat, and he could use more pec thickness. Also in the front double bicep pose, he holds his arms too far forward, making himself appear narrower than he really is. Greg is the most spectacular just standing relaxed, especially among a group of smaller men. Today he presented an impressive and competitive package, earning him a well-deserved second place. Albert Beckles, 15 points, first place. From the moment that the TV lights were turned on, it was clear that the old veteran of the posing platform, 52-year-old Albert Beckles, was the clear winner. Judging from his perfect score, the judges were unanimous in their decision. Albert was the highlight of the entire competition, literally wiping up the stage with guys half his age. They were not even competitive with Albert, making his win even more spectacular. This is the second time Albert has won this championship. We all felt that he was lucky to win it the last time, over 2 years ago against Ko. Now, though, he was back better than ever and even more awesome. As he shocked everyone with his spunky, modern, dance-like posing, the entire theater came alive. The Toronto bodybuilding fans loved him. His posing first began with Albert entering on stage on one side, where he would dance a bit, do a pose, and then dance again until he had made his way across the entire stage. Albert's condition was the best that I've seen him in several years. He was full, thick, and perfectly cut. Famous peak biceps were chiseled and honed to razor sharpness. There's no question that Albert is the guiding light of our sport. His example is a tribute to everyone who thinks you're never too old to enjoy life and compete in something you love. Some men are born to greatness. Albert was born to be a bodybuilder, and his greatness is in his physique, which serves as an inspiration to us all. All right, perfect article for our Albert Beckles interview. So that is it for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast this week. Again, thanks to Old School Labs, to Florida Alternative Medicine, and to our Patreon sponsors. Next week, we'll be joined by Jim Seitzer from Cincinnati, Ohio. See you guys next week. Take care.